You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 oh.
Hello, Dodger fans. Welcome to Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Central, along with Vince Samperio of Chavez Ravine Fiends. Vince, the Dodgers did not celebrate their division title like they normally do, but they kind of had a little bit of a hangover game anyway.
Yeah, maybe they ended up all having socially distanced champagne or something at home.
Yeah, the bats were okay. They actually had 10 of the 11 hardest hit balls of the night. But unfortunately, the one that the A's snuck into that top 11 was the game-winning home run by Ramon Laureano in the ninth inning. So we're going to talk a little bit about the loss. Not a lot to dwell on there, but we're going to talk about some of the positive signs we saw from Bellinger and Muncy. We're going to talk about Blake Treinen and his recent struggles, talk about the playoff outlook and the current standings stuff, and a few other things. So that's the plan. But first, we want to remind you, please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right. I don't know. Let's do the negative first, I guess. Let's talk about Blake Treinen. He started off really well this season and was really good for most of the year. He had one clunker at the end of July when he allowed four runs. They happened to be all unearned, but still, he allowed two walks and a hit. So it's not like he was lights out. But other than that, he was really, really good until probably a couple weeks ago. He had his first really bad outing on September 5th, allowed three runs to the Rockies, got the loss there. And then he allowed three more runs a few days ago, again against the Rockies. And then, unfortunately, on Wednesday night, he allowed his first home run of the season, and it was a big one. With a runner on second and two outs, he was, close to getting out of the inning. And he just hung a pitch to Ramon Laureano, who pounded it over the wall in left field. On a scale of 1 to, I'm trying to think of a funny person to say instead of just say 10. On a scale of 1 to Kenley Jansen, how concerned are you about Blake Treinen?
Optimistically, I'd go around a 3 or 4. And if you just chalk up, okay, the Dodgers are not going to face the Rockies in the playoffs. And then even last night, the runner that got on base before the home run, he would have been out of the inning. It was a very much an excuse me swing that just happened to bloop into the outfield. Now, obviously, results based, especially when the postseason coming up. So there's not, you can't make those excuses. But Treinen, I need to learn that. He's been sketchy to me kind of all season. His whip is he's allowing over a runner an inning, which is not crazy. 1.19 isn't crazy, but the fact that he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts, and yes, he does throw the hard sinker to get a lot of ground balls, but I don't know. I haven't fully invested into him yet this year, and so the 3 or 4 may be a little generous. Once the playoffs start, everyone's at like a Kenley Jansen, I guess. But I'm not too concerned now, especially with two of those bad appearances being against the same team and a team that they might not face. But I also think that more people or different people may have a lot higher belief in him than I do.
Even with that heavy sinker, he's had 25 plate appearances this season in a double play situation, meaning a runner on first and less than two outs. 25 opportunities, and he's only got two double play grounders. And so, yeah, for whatever reason, he's got good stuff. He doesn't strike guys out. He's got that sinker, but he doesn't get the ground balls when he needs them. It's really kind of confounding. I think I agree with you. I'm not overly worried about him, but he's definitely not as lights out as I had hoped he would be and as he has looked at times this year. I don't know. I guess let's talk about some positive stuff. You have any other Trinan thoughts, or should we move on to some positive stuff?
No, we can move on.
So I mentioned Laureano had the only ball to slip into the top 10 hardest hit balls of the night, and he barely did. He had the ninth hardest hit ball. The Dodgers had numbers 1 through 8 and 10 through 12, so 11 of the 12 hardest hit balls on the night were by the Dodgers. A few lineouts, a couple groundouts, and a lot of hits. And some of those hard-hit balls came from Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger, which obviously Corey Seager had two of them too. He's always we can count on him all the time. But Muncy hit another homer. Bellinger hit another homer. They both looked pretty darn good. Belly did strike out in the ninth inning. That Hendricks guy is pretty tough. Once the Dodgers went down by two, it was hard to expect too much of a comeback there. But I don't know. Are you feeling better about Max Muncy than you were 2 days ago?
Yeah, 2 days of home runs will do it for you. But I think it's more so not the results as much as what he, you know, how he hit them. The one yesterday was a pretty classic Muncy one with an outside pitch. Not quite the other way, but more left center than straight left field. But that one was nice. And then, you know, pull power is always going to be there. He's had the power all year off and on. I mean, I think he's on pace for probably in a normal season over 25 home runs or something. But just he looks more comfortable. He looks more relaxed. We saw the video of him with Dave Roberts in the night before game. You know, he has a lot going on. He's said it a little bit too, but I like where he's going. And, you know, at this point with the playoffs, the results are going to matter more so than how I feel. So if he's going to hit home runs, even if I don't feel that confident, I'll take it. Same thing with Bellinger, although Bellinger does look a little bit better, and he has looked better for about a week or week plus now, just with his at-bats and seeing different pitches. And you know, the one he hit yesterday, he really got, it was really inside. He got in on it, got his hands in on it. So it's been positive for those two. And we've said all year, we didn't really care how their numbers in the season turned out as long as they turned it on when they needed to. And if this is them turning it on when they need to go along with Pollock and Taylor and Seager, who have been on fire in recent weeks, and then Mookie Betts, who's just been good all year, it's a little bit exciting to go into the postseason thinking about it.
Yeah, even though the Dodgers are 1-1 in their last two games, they have 7 home runs in those two games. And so that, and from some of the guys who they're going to need to contribute in October. So that's good. So Muncy has 12 homers in 56 games, which, shockingly, guess what that's a pace for 162, Vince?
Is it 35 again?
It's 35. 34.7, which rounds up to 35. So, yeah, I mean, power-wise, he is exactly what he's been the last 2 years. And so if we can see him making more consistent contact like he has been, maybe those power numbers even jump up more. So I sure would be excited to see Bellinger and Muncy being awesome in October and being assets rather than liabilities, because that's what the Dodgers are going to need, I think.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the Dodgers, you know, regardless of everything else, they need their good players to be good in order to make it through October. So, and Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger would fall under that category of good players. So they need to step it up, and hopefully this is them getting going. They're, you know, whatever they need, whatever the confidence and seeing pitches and whatever else it is, hopefully this is it.
Yes, indeed. And speaking of indeed, we're going to be back in a minute to talk about Julio and Justin Turner and the standings. But first, we're going to talk about Indeed. Indeed is a job website for job seekers and people who are listing, looking for to hire. And Indeed.com, in fact, is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring, and you only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. 73% of online job seekers visit Indeed each month, so Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. And right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. So you should try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/LockedOnMLB. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/LockedOnMLB. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. And now let's talk about RockAuto.com. You know what RockAuto.com is. It's an online auto parts dealer. They're a family-owned business. They've been doing this for 20 years. They're really good at it. They have all the parts your car will need, and they have better prices than you're going to get anywhere else. It's a dangerous time to be going out in the world. Don't go down to an auto parts store. Those places are more dangerous than most places anyway. They're dirty, gross, ew. But guess what's not dirty and gross? The internet. I'm the first person ever to say that. But if you go to rockauto.com, you won't get dirty and gross. You will just get a nice, clean website with all the parts your car needs. And you will get the best prices you're going to get, because unlike auto parts stores, rockauto.com gives the same price to everybody and doesn't give preferential pricing to mechanics, which you are not one of. So check out rockauto.com. And when they ask who sent you, say Locked On Dodgers sent me. And then you will get amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. And keep it locked on Dodgers. All right, Vince, it's time for our obscure former Dodger of the day. I was looking at guys who, with the Dodgers playing the A's right now, I looked at guys who played for the Dodgers and the A's and no other teams. And there were some interesting guys on that list. A guy you might have heard of by the name of Tommy Lasorda played for the Dodgers and the A's and nobody else. Bob Welch, former Cy Young Award winner with the A's and playoff hero with the Dodgers. Jason Grabowski, Glenn Burke, he was a former obscure former Dodger. A guy named Max Muncy you might have heard of. So a lot of guys. But the one I decided to go with is a guy who should be obscure, is a little bit less obscure than he should be just because he happened to play a part in maybe the most famous play in Dodger history. That's Mike Davis. Mike Davis was drafted by the A's in 1977, made the big leagues with them in 1980, and spent 7 years with them, 8 years with the A's. And then he signed as a free agent with the Dodgers after the 87 season. Was a pretty big get for the Dodgers. Davis had hit 24, 19, and 22 homers the three previous years, which was actually a lot at that point in time. And he was a good outfielder and a good hitter. And then he came to the Dodgers, and he forgot how to hit. He was pretty lousy in 1988, batted 196, only hit 2 home runs, had a 54 OPS plus, was just really, really bad. And he, in game one of the 88 World Series, for some reason was on the roster, and he ended up walking against Dennis Eckersley with 2 outs to bring up Kirk Gibson before Kirk Gibson's homer. Davis stole second during that at bat. And so if you're a Dodger fan, you've seen a lot of Mike Davis. When Vince Scully said, he walked him and look who's coming up. Well, the he in that sentence is Mike Davis. And one other notable thing about Mike Davis, his brother Mark Davis, not the Raiders owner with the really cool hair, but the brother of Mike Davis, also played in the big leagues, got 2 plate appearances with the Angels in 1991. And they both went to Herbert Hoover High School in San Diego, which has had 11 Major League Baseball players, including Ray Boone, who was the father of Bob Boone, who was the father of Brett and Aaron Boone, Jerry DeVanen, who's the father of Jeff DeVanen, and Ted Williams, who you may have heard of, also went to Herbert Hoover High School in San Diego. And that's about all I have to say about Mike Davis. You have any Mike Davis thoughts, Vince?
No, much like most of your score from Dodgers, I have no Mike Davis thoughts.
Huh. Well, good. You knew who he was,
yeah,
though, right?
I've heard the name before,
You've
and I knew who
Kirk
he is.
Gibson homer enough times. All right, so let's talk. I don't know. We have let's talk about Julio next, I guess. He originally was scheduled to start this game, and then word came out a few hours before the game that Julio was not starting and Joe Kelly was, and we all kind of assumed that it was the same thing they did with Dustin May last week, going with the opener. We don't really know what the thinking was behind it. I don't know if Roberts has addressed it at all or not, but I haven't heard it. And so we eventually got word that Julio would be the bulk guy in the game. So Joe Kelly pitched the first inning. Bruiser Gratterall pitched the second inning. And then Julio came in and pitched six really good innings, just allowed one run, and looked really good. Obviously, it's just one game. We don't know enough to know for sure whether it solved his first inning woes or if it's just coincidence. It's not like he allowed runs every first inning when he pitched. But whatever they were doing, it looked like it worked out, right?
In one way, yes. In the other way, we still don't know if maybe just Julio Day's first innings are cursed, because Joe Kelly did give up three runs in the first inning when we knew Julio was supposed to be the bulk guy. So unfortunately for the Dodgers, they don't have another chance to test that out. But yeah, in all seriousness, Julio looked good. You know, he's come out of the bullpen before the last couple of years, so he knows the mentality. Obviously, this one's a little bit different, knowing you're coming out of the bullpen and you're going to be the bulk innings guy. But he settled in right away, didn't have, you know, first inning. I think first three innings were all hitless, and then he ended up giving up the one run later on. But it's just, you know, Julio has been, just based on everyone else being that much better than him in terms of more consistent, I guess, overall, he's kind of been pushed down a little bit. But I mean, if you take out the first inning, which obviously you can't, but if you took out the first inning, he's right there as one of the top guys here as well. And even with those first innings, he still has pretty solid numbers. So I think he'll be fine. I do like them trying out different things, and maybe they do go out and try to do one of these bullpen / bulk inning games in the playoffs if they need to. And now they have kind of, not necessarily the recipe, but they know Julio can handle it. They've already know that Bruiser can handle it starting. Maybe Joe Kelly, he was probably working on things more than anything. He's still trying to get back into the swing of things. So I'm not reading too much into that. But yeah, it was a good little experiment that they tried. I believe they said they might try with Gonsolin as well this week. So it's just trying to get guys in different situations in order to prepare for anything that can happen in the postseason.
Yeah, and Roberts even said a couple weeks ago he's going to try to get a lot of guys some work out of the bullpen, just in preparation for the postseason in case they're needed in that role. And so, yeah, this is a good hybrid of that, where you're warming up in the bullpen while the game's going on, so it's kind of like coming in from the bullpen, but it's also kind of like starting, so you're not undoing any stretch-outedness that you might have on the pitchers. But yeah, Julio, it was tied for his second longest outing of the season, innings pitched-wise, tied for third longest number of pitches-wise. He threw 86 pitches in six innings. And so, yeah, it's not like he came out there and was just going all out from the start, not pacing himself. He was still acting as a starter, and so the fact that he did start strong, I really don't believe there's anything about the first inning. But I'm hoping that if nothing else, maybe this showed Julio, oh, my first inning pitch, I can do that. No big deal. It's and maybe it'll flip some switch in his mind or whatever, if there is some mental block there. But also, I wouldn't mind it when we do get to the point in the postseason when Julio is starting. I wouldn't mind seeing Bruiser open for him or somebody else, you know, whoever it is. The only downside of an opener is, you know, if you use one of your best relievers as an opener and then you end up losing 9-1, you know, it's a game that normally your good relievers would have got the day off and instead you used them. But in the postseason, you hope you don't lose any 9-1 games, and B, you're kind of going all out in the postseason and not worrying as much about days off. Justin Turner played. He played third base a day after being scratched. And after I said I wouldn't be surprised to see him take the rest of the A's series off, he flipped me the bird and said, no way, I'm playing, man. He played third base for five innings or so, and then Edwin Rios replaced him, which was the plan. Robert said before the game, JT would play five or six innings and then he'd be done. So no concerns there. He had an infield single that probably, you know, in a perfect world would have been called an error. It's just hard to know what to call the error on because the third baseman fielded it cleanly and then he just kind of laid down and take a nap. And then he also got on base on another one that should have been a double play and the first baseman just decided not to catch the ball. So he was on base a couple times, but didn't really knock the cover off the ball. Didn't look great at the plate, but the fact that JT played and, as far as we know, came out of it injury-free is a positive sign.
He's probably the one guy that I don't worry about too much in terms of hitting-wise. Good to see him in the field. Came out when they said he was going to come out, which is good. He didn't come out any earlier. I believe Dave Roberts said after the game that everything went well. So that's good now that he's been out there and shown that he can do it. Maybe now he takes the rest of the week off on defense, maybe gets a couple of DH appearances or maybe one more time in the field. But it should be kind of bubble wrap for Justin until next week.
Hopefully, and yeah, hopefully he will be firing on all cylinders when the postseason starts. All right, I think last thing, let's just talk a little bit about the standings right now in the National League. Because now the Dodgers have clinched not only the division, but the best record in the National League. They will be playing the eighth seed when that time comes. And right now that eighth seed could be really one of five teams. It could be the Marlins, the Phillies, the Cardinals, the Reds, or the Giants. And only four of those five teams will make the postseason. Right? Am I right?
I want to say three. The second place in the NL East, second place in the Central. Oh, two wild cards. Yeah, four.
Okay, yeah. So four of those five teams will make the postseason, but they're battling for position and who's going to be. Oh, did I mention the? Oh, there's six teams. Marlins, Phillies, Cardinals, Reds, Brewers, and Giants. And four of those six teams will make it. And any of those six could be the eighth seed. They're all separated by like a game or less right now in the standings. And it looks like it's going to come down to the wire, which actually helps the Dodgers quite a bit because all these teams are going to be battling just to get in. And so they're not going to be able to rest their starters or anything. And so the Dodgers might start their short three-game series not going up against their opponent's best pitchers.
Yeah, you would imagine all these teams are going to go all out for a playoff spot. We saw the Reds. Trevor Bauer pitched on short rest last night. Very possible that he pitches again this weekend if they need him in a pinch, and maybe that pushes them out of a potential Game 1 start. And you know, just every other team is going to be throwing guys basically all the way through Sunday, so they're going to be having to fight. And it could go either way. You know, there's no real proven method of doing it, whether it's coasting, not that the Dodgers are coasting, but just the general fact that they've clinched everything. This last week will kind of be more coasting and figuring things out rather than playing and grinding to try to get into the postseason. But I don't think it's going to give them any advantage. Yeah, I mean, like I said, of all those teams, I still have the Reds as the one that scares me. None of the other teams really scared me at all. But either way, the Dodgers should handle business against any of those teams. It shouldn't matter who they play.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun that really we know the 1, 2, 3 seeds are all set. The three division winners and then the Padres. But then those other six teams are battling for spots 5, 6, 7, and 8. And any of them could end up in any of those spots, and two of them will end up out of the postseason. So it's for as boring as the American League is right now, the American League, there's almost no suspense left at all. The three division winners are all locked in, and two of the second place teams are locked in, and the Indians are locked in as the third place team, or at worst. And so the only question left is whether the Astros can hold off the Angels. And right now, the Astros' magic number to finish ahead of the Angels is 2. And so really, there's almost no drama at all in the American League. But the National League has a lot. None of it is at the top, but there's a lot of drama at the bottom of the of the postseason picture. And the crazy thing is, because they're not doing any tiebreaker games, and the first tiebreaker is your record within your division, which makes sense when it's a tiebreaker. Like we talked the other day about how if the Dodgers and Padres had ended up tied, the Dodgers would win the division because they won the series with the Padres. But then the next tiebreaker is your division, your record within the division, which would make sense. But when you're talking about, say, the Giants and the Brewers end up tied for the eighth spot, well, then the first tiebreaker will be, because they didn't play each other, the tiebreaker will be who had the better record in their division, which another way of putting it is who had the worst record outside of their division, because you only play teams in your division or outside your division. And so it's kind of a weird way to set that tiebreaker. And so the Giants, it will come down to, hey, you had 20 games against the Dodgers and the Padres, and the Brewers had 20 games against the Cubs and the Cardinals, who aren't nearly as good as the Dodgers and Padres. And that could end up being their tiebreaker. And that's just one example. But if it comes down to a tiebreaker for the Giants, they're at a major disadvantage because they had to play better teams than the other teams did.
Yep. One other thing, I guess, to add is that Mike Clevinger for the Padres came out of his game early after being pushed back for bicep stuff. So potentially the Padres could be without Clevinger for the playoffs.
And it sounds more likely than not. He went for an MRI, but he was scratched from his last start and then pulled from this start after one inning and sent for an MRI. It's hard to imagine any good news coming out of that. And obviously, you don't root for injury for anybody. And, you know, I believe the Dodgers are a better team than the Padres and would beat them head-to-head regardless of who's healthy and who's not. And I would have rather seen the Dodgers beat a Padres team with Clevinger. But it's also hard not to recognize that a potential second-round matchup just got a little bit better for the Dodgers. If Clevinger is out, they still have Denelson Lamet, who's very good. And they have other starters who have been good at times this year. And so anything can happen in a series. But, yeah, that definitely could impact the Dodgers. It could even impact the Dodgers in who their second-round opponent is, because suddenly the Padres are going to be playing against, you know, a team in a three-game series and not having Clevinger. That's a tough blow for them there.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts, Vince?
Nope. Walker Buehler tomorrow. I'm excited to see how he's doing, and hopefully everything's cool.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'm excited to see it. Wanted to give a quick shout out to a listener by the name of Shelley, who she sent me a DM taking me to task for us being mean to Kike. And as I explained to her on Twitter, I love Kike as a teammate, as a personality and everything. I love his defense. And there are times that I love his offense, but he's just not consistent. And I'm just being realistic for what's best for the team. So, and that mustache was awful. So if I said bad things about the mustache, I meant every word of it. But everything else, there's nothing personal. It's just, you know, we want what's best for the Dodgers. And we're all Kike fans. So, but thanks for listening, Shelley. And thanks for reaching out. Thank you all for listening. Please subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. If you have Apple Podcasts, go ahead and subscribe there. Even if you don't use it, that will help other people find us. We are on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog. DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com. Our phone number is 323-863-LOCK-5625. You can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text there anytime you want. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.
D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart, all heart and all thumbs. They're my Los Angeles. Your Los Angeles. Our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bye!